Subcommittee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is Thursday. This week is rapidly going by fast. The 13th, tomorrow is Sweetheart's Day. For all of you individuals out there listening, don't forget that it is the day of love. You know, I kind of think that love should be 365 days a year, not just on the 14th, which is the birthday of our state. And we're in public hearing on Senate Bill 5507, the State Commission on Children and Families, and we're going to have the agency's budget discussion. And with us, of course, is Linda. There, and I've got Donna here, and Sean.
All right.
And we also have with us our featured star that's right in the middle, our pig. We're back now on contributions, if thou use acronyms. And the dollars that will go into the pig will be used later to go to the Oregon Food Bank to feed the hungry. So we actually encourage you in some respect to be generous because the cause is worthy. All right, Donna.
Senator Winters, members of the committee, I am Donna Middleton, the director of the State Commission on Children and Families. I want to point out a couple of things that are in front of you, and you'll be pleased to know I'm not going to read them or go through them. However, as part of the Community Comprehensive Planning Effort Phase 2, the state is required through the legislation to develop a state plan using all 36 of the community comprehensive plans. What you have in front of you is the state plan. Just hot off the presses. So, again, it's for your review, and I'd be available for questions at any time after you've looked through that. But it's not something we're going to go through today. I also have in front of you something that Senator Winters asked for, which was the confidentiality policy for Healthy Start that all Healthy Start programs are asked to provide to their families prior to providing services. So you have a copy. It looks like this for your information. And then another piece that I'll get to as my presentation continues. So I'd like to start from this book, the budget presentation book, on page 5. And what I'm going to do this time is just go through the book, not mentioning pages, not necessarily reading pages, and then stopping for any questions you might have at any time. So it's the presentation book. So we're going to start with page 5, which is under the Organization and Budget Summary tab, which is where I left off. And that is the budget principles that we were talking about. And just want to draw your attention to the last half, starting with the continuing to provide strong administrative support. I'm not going to read that, but that is basically what the State Commission is looking at as far as principles for the state administrative piece of the State Commission, local commission work. And if you have questions, I'd be happy to go into that further. Now I'm going to go to page 7, going similar tab, going right along to the agency organization structure. The agency has basically three components. It has one component called policy and planning, which works on the comprehensive planning, the local developing local systems and coordination. We analyze policy and develop issues around best practices, and then we also look at cultural competency issues and outcome and data. One of the things the State Commission does quite well and has done since its inception is require data and outcome and results. The local commissions have not been in existence at any time when that wasn't a requirement, is that they work on outcomes and results. It's been that way since the inception, and we collect that data. The other part of our program is called Programs and Initiatives. You heard a lot about those programs and initiatives yesterday and from the folks who testified on Tuesday. They are Healthy Start, Early Childhood Care and Education, which is child care, federally funded child care, Early Childhood Systems, which was part of the Oregon Children's Plan, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, Positive Youth Development, which is a federal grant, and Family Resource Centers and Crisis Nurseries. What I would mention there is that while we have listed Family Resource Centers are one of the programs that was cut during the five special sessions.
Donna, question. Mm-hmm. In addition to your role in as planning and statistical gathering and working with the communities, and you mentioned outcomes, mm-hmm. what is the commission's function actually I'm thinking now a program audit and the issue that was in the paper today with respect to Healthy Start. How does the that's very troubling, particularly when we're looking at dollars that you're having where more is going into administrative costs than actually is going into program delivery. What is the commission's role with that particular issue? Do you have an oversight? What can the commission do?
Senator Winters, we definitely have an oversight. In that particular instance, we do both program and fiscal audits. And what that article did was bring up the reason we do both fiscal and program audits. I can say to you that fiscal and program audit is in effect with that particular issue as we speak. We have done fiscal and program audits for nearly all of the Healthy Start programs and continue to do that on a regular basis. We have a manual, if you will, of how the program is to be conducted, both fiscally and programmatically. And we do regular trainings, and we also do support in counties, and we also do oversight of that particular program.
What are the do you have those audit statements with respect to the issue that was in the paper today? And are the audits internal or external? Who provides the audits?
Senator Winters, we have our fiscal staff and our staff from the Healthy Start program provide those audits at the state level. And we have staff specifically in both of those areas to do that. We have what we call quality assurance, and then we have our fiscal staff who does the fiscal audit.
Is the audit on the Healthy Start program over in Polk County, is that completed?
Senator Winters, it is not. It is just beginning.
So you're in process.
That's correct.
And what are some of the things, I'm very troubled because I heard some information today that's even more troubling, and that is the possibility that there could be dollars that are supposed to be going into direct service that Medicaid dollars that may have been used in other parts of their budget. And that's very troubling to me. And so when you, as you proceed in this audit, mm-hmm. I would like to make sure that I'm giving the information on this audit. And I also would ask, because I think it's kind of, when we self-audit, sometimes we don't get all the information. And I want to make sure that we're having external forces that are involved in the audits of the program. And I know that there's some other stuff that's involved that's involving because you've got two counties. And those are some issues that you have to work through as to who, how this all mushes out. But I was troubled this morning when I read it in the paper.
Senator Winters, we have been discussing it with those two counties for some time now, and the information that's been gathered will be part of the audit process.
Well, I would like to be kept apprised of the results, and as you move along, mm-hmm. Particularly the enrichment of the facility and all those kinds of issues I mean, I think we're coming out of this process with talking about lean machines that are actually where dollars are going in to make sure that kids and their families are being served, and not so much an investment in somebody's building. I just have to put that out there, because that's what the paper, you know, said. And this body has the task of talking about where future dollars are going. And so please keep me advised of as you go forward, and please convey to those who are involved that it's very troubling to see this in the paper. And if it's true that they're paying a disproportionate amount to non-essentials, it caused some great consternation for myself and I'm sure members in this group. So I won't belabor it any further.
Thank you, Senator Winters. It's that old
debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am going to belabor it a little bit more, but not on this particular thing. It seems all too often when you sit in mm-hmm. committee here, the agencies come before us with basically glowing reports of what's going on, and then we read from some other source that there's problems. And I, for one, am real concerned that that we never seem to get the information we need from the agencies. We get it through newspaper reports, through individuals telling us something. You have to track it down backwards to find it. And I think that's one of the basic problems we have in government right now, is that people don't trust us for some very good reasons. And I would ask that all agencies, as they come before us, please be forthcoming and honest with us. We're going to hear about a problem anyway. We'd rather hear it from you than from the newspapers. And I think it's a very good example of the exact we're talking about.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It may be something that we can cover as we go through the budget, but I would be curious if you had some estimate of the amount of dollars invested in policy and planning. I know there's been an extensive amount of that to actually carry out the intent of the statute. I'm wondering, are we now hopefully transitioning out of investments in that and focusing more in the services? Mm-hmm. And if maybe as we go through that, if you could address that issue, would be helpful.
Yes, Senator Winters, Senator Morris. Yes, I think we will get to that as we go through the budget.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go forward from the agency structure and move into just mention page 8 is the staffing analysis for the State Commission staff.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. And I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but before we leave the organizational structure, could you explain what it is you are trying to convey to us through the chart and the shaded areas?
On Senator Gordy, what page is that?
This is on page 6.
The shaded areas are the program positions. The program positions that you see in the center are the program staff, office staff, and then the white areas are the administrative. Is that correct? The administrative piece. So the ones in the shaded ones work most directly with communities and do program oversight in those, and the white ones are the state agency administrative staff. I think that's it.
Follow up, Senator Gordon.
Yes, Madam Chair. And can you relate the positions to the question that Senator Morris asked previously about policy and planning? Are the policy and planning positions in that shaded area?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, yes, they are. Mm-hmm. There is actually one position there. If you look on the lower right, there's a program technician 2, which says EC plan. That's an early childhood planner position. That position is actually vacant, has been held vacant this biennium to achieve vacancy savings through special session 2 and 3.
And one additional question, Madam Chair. What is the salary range for those different positions in the shaded area?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, predominantly, if you look, they are program technicians and program representatives. Those are salary range 26s and 27s, which is about mid-range professional within the state with management structure.
Which is how much? I don't know what the minutes are.
Approximately 26 to 2700, I think.
We could get that.
Could we get a for future references and for this one for this panel salary range schedule from BAM?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, there.
Whole, you didn't catch me.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Budget and management.
I missed BAM. Margaret, did you miss that?
I did, Representative. Well, thank you.
Okay. I think she should pay my fine.
Well, that means I'm going to really be on my job now.
So I'm not going to read from the page 8. I did want to move us over to page 10 and just note that the graph at the bottom is a depiction of our budget allocation and staffing history, and this was developed by Legislative Fiscal, and it does show that we have not, at least at the state level, been increasing our staff as the same time as the budget has been increasing as far as dollars go. We haven't increased our staff
you
as well.
Question?
I'm sorry. Please.
Thank you. Sure. You have not increased your positions for about how many years or biennia? For a long time?
A long time. We have stayed fairly stable for a while.
Okay.
Yes. It's been within the one or two position range.
Okay, thank you.
And Madam Chair, thank you. While we're still talking about staff, just to get a clarification on the salary of 2,600 to 2,700, is that per month?
Senator Gordley, yes, it would be per month.
Further questions?
None. I'm going to go to page 13. Which these are big budget pages, and just note the breakdown of funding for the commission system, both general fund, other funds, and federal funds by line item or program area. So you see some of the resources for the grant stream, some of the resources for the child care development, Healthy Start budget. Our basic capacity, which is the local commission's resources, and then, as you can see, our policy and support budget at the bottom, which is a little bit to Senator Morris's question of the resources that go into the policy planning piece of that. That's our administrative budget. Our administrative budget is at 4%.
What is the
President Smith?
Thank you. What is the total employee base budget? Administration is 4%. Does that include all your employees?
No.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, Representative Smith. No, actually, the policy and support services are the administrative staff on the graph that are in the white. We have some state staff technical assistance. That is that line above the line, the $925,000. That would be direct program staff that work in programs or provide direct service or support to community programs. So we have the programmatic budget, state and local, and then we have the direct administrative budget, which is program 002.
Thank you.
Another question?
On page 14, then, we have our revenues. We have the social service block grant, which is the Title $20, and those estimated revenues are $6,324,312. We have the Safe and Stable Families, which is another federal resource, at about $2.5 million. We have the Child Care and Development Block Grant at 3.7. And then the Ombudsman, which we are requesting to transfer to the Department of Human Services.
Donna, could you go back a little bit to the Child Care and Development Block
Sure.
Grant? And explain a little bit, because I understand, are these considered flex funds? I mean, can you use them for reasons other than development? You can't line item change.
No, Senator Carter, you cannot. Those are pretty specific funds for child care. And then we have the Healthy Start Medicaid, which is the earnings that Healthy Start makes by matching general fund dollars. It's a 50-50 match, it looks like. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Donna, go back just a little bit for me.
Sure.
I know that they're for child care, but if you had to rearrange your dollars in the child care area, can you, within the constructs of using them for child care, transfer any of those dollars? For instance,
okay.
If you're asking for any increases in dollars, or if we cut you for any reason in the child care area, can you take these block grant dollars, or are they so specifically tied to a line item that you can't?
Senator Carter, you're just speaking about the child care block grant money.
Yes.
in particular.
Uh-huh.
We have our part of the child care block grant. It's in three different places, and our piece of it is quality and training and quantity of child care providers. And so we can't move it to paying for slots, for instance.
No.
We have to keep it in that particular range. And we can't move it to another service delivery out of the child care resource.
So
we have some specific...
Okay. Madam Chair, we're just trying to think as we go forth and try to make, I think that the conversation is talking about a 10% cut, rearranging the debt and that kind of stuff. I'm just trying to find out if it's a block grant, and the block grant calls for child care and development, that any place in the child care and development area for whatever that program is itemized, can she use it for other purposes within the child care arena? That was what I was trying to clarify. She's saying no.
No.
That was my question.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, just to give you a little more perspective, the Child Care and Development Block Grant, it's a block grant to the state as a whole. The Money Employment Division is the primary agency. There is a whole process and planning and allocation of these funds. The piece that the commission gets is very specific as to use.
Okay. Gotcha.
One of the other questions that we received was the issue of matching. We have our resources matched. Our resources are used by the Department of Human Services to match the temporary assistance to needy families dollars. We have a maintenance of effort for the Department of Human Services using our general fund dollars. So we are pretty matched, if you will. So even though we have dollars that go to local folks or to local programs, Department of Human Services uses those dollars as part of their match to receive their resources. I just want to, because I think there was a question at one time about could we take the state dollars that we currently have and match them further. And we've already given our Department of Human Services, I'll put a dollar in the pig. Department of Human Services has already matched our money. I mean, I just wanted to let you know of that particular
question.
Reverend Smith.
Thank you, Chair. T. Smith, yes. go back up to your social services block grant, your Title 20. How many different programs does that money stream to?
Senator Winters, Representative Smith, could you give me a little more context?
It goes to the Office of Children, Adults, and Families. How many different specific program areas does that money go to?
Representative Smith, the $6 million comes to us. That it's a much larger block grant, much larger. And services to children, families, or child welfare use that in their child welfare system as well for a number of different programs. So we only get a very small portion of it at the State Commission. I don't know what the total block grant is.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Smith, I believe it's about $36 million a year. It's been declining in recent past. DHS generally uses it for child welfare services. There may be some pieces in other places, and we can look at that as we get into the Department of Human Services budget. But this arrangement was constructed to allow, because of the requirements in terms of what can be used for federal matching funds and what general fund is available where and who has flexible general fund, this arrangement was constructed to give the commission some of the social services block grant money instead of having them be a pure general fund budget. So that is the social services block grant money is used as a statewide resource to help offset what would otherwise be general fund expenditures in the commission's budget. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's a bigger picture than just this piece that the commission gets is not indicated.
Okay, and then follow up. Yeah, on your next funding source here, your safe and stable families, can I assume the same for that?
Senator, Representative Smith, yes, you can.
Okay.
Same thing.
I'm just trying to get a grasp here.
I appreciate that.
And then at the bottom of that paragraph says to operate family preservation services and community-based family support services. Well, that sounds like that money could go to any number of your six programs and initiatives. Is that true, or is it funneled into Healthy Start or early childhood systems? Or
Representative Smith, you still talk about the safe and stable families?
Yes.
Yes. That does, some of those resources do go into our Healthy Start program and also go into our other, they can go into child care. They can go into a number of
follow-ups. Does it go into Babies First also?
Representative Smith, no, it does not.
Okay. Thank you.
I might clarify. Their budget is a combination of a lot of various federal funding streams. In order to maximize or leverage the federal dollars, what has occurred here is that you have some general fund dollars, so we can term it as a seed that we've given them. And then we've taken where we can mirror or marry or use the federal dollars and taking those in to give them through that leveraging, which then allows them to do the total scope or comprehension of their program. And that might be the simplistic way of looking at it. That's why you have so many different titles here. If we were back in a lot of years ago, when the federal government actually had what we call block grant funding, and they would give the state a block of money, and then we could use it, you know, how we saw fit. We no longer have that ability to do that. So inside the system, we have to look at dollars, pots of money, and try to relate them to the mission of what we're trying to do. And that's why you're going to see in this budget, and you're going to see it in other budgets, where you may have several federal titles to money that come to the state for specified purposes, but we then kind of massage it and try to make it fit into the objectives of our state. Does that kind of...
And Madam Chair, the other point I would note is that the funding streams that the Commission has, the Social Services Block Grant, Safe and Stable Families, Child Care and Development Block Grant, on a statewide level, those are capped federal funds. They're not like Medicaid, where the more general fund you put in for eligible services, the more federal funding you can draw down. These are a capped resource, so if you're looking at how to use those dollars differently, it's not that more dollars would be available to the state as a whole. It's that you would then, if you wanted to continue the same programmatic level, you'd have to replace those dollars with something else. So it's, again, a distinction between a capped federal funding source and a almost unlimited one in Medicaid.
There's another point. You cannot use federal dollars to supplant either general fund dollars, and that's always the little trick that those who are involved in budgets and programs have to walk around or dance around.
Okay, I'm going to go on to the, and again, if you're, as you're flipping through here, if you have questions, please ask me. I want to try and get to as many points and as we can. I'm going to go over to the programmatic and initiatives piece, and you had heard a lot yesterday and the day before from a number of programs, so I'm not going to go through those again. I just wanted to point out some areas within those program areas. In particular, the first one is Healthy Start, and you have in front of you, or had in front of you, I don't know if you have it today, the Healthy Start status report. This is the report. This is an evaluated program. This program is independently evaluated yearly on its effectiveness and results. And so you have a we handed those out Tuesday, I believe. So you have that, and then you have a summary of that as well. But I just wanted to point that out, that this is an evaluated program.
Donna, given the limited resources, has there been any discussion or talk about perhaps not having to do all personal business visits, but maybe some of them could be by telephone when you're visiting in the Healthy Start? Has there been that discussion?
Senator Winters, some of that does happen even now. We're at 65% of first verse, so we don't get even to all first verse. So there's other ways. There's a one-time welcome baby. There's telephone conversations that say call if you need help and support. The visits that are currently being made are to the families in highest need. And what we're finding is we have some we're beginning to see some excellent results. Children who are in the program have much lower abuse rates and have showed growth in development and immunizations and a number of things. And you'll see that in the report. We have some very good results from those visits to those very vulnerable families. And this program consistently has those good results. So I just wanted to point that out to you. The next program is the Court-Appointed Special Advocates Program. And that program, for the first time, is receiving an audit with the help of National CASA. And so we're also getting some excellent results. One of the things that we did in the audit for the CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates Program, boy, I'm going to... ask and poll judges in this state to see whether they, because court-appointed special advocates work so closely with the judges, to see how they liked the service and whether they thought the service was something that was useful to them. And that report is just being finalized, but I can tell you that the report is excellent from the judges as to the service that the court-appointed special advocates give them. Excellent. And I was very pleased to hear that. So you will be receiving, as soon as we get the final copy, that report as well. We try as much as possible to provide some sort of outside view of the services that we provide so that you can get a good idea about where the resources are going and how they're being spent in communities and at the state level. Because we know that in these tough times, that may or may not be a deciding factor. So we try to do that. And unfortunately, though, that's usually one of the first resources that's diminished in these times. So it's kind of a, you know, we're walking a fine balance. We don't want to not evaluate so that you have good information. At the same time, we don't want evaluation to take away from services. So we work on that. The next one is childhood care and education, and that's the child care block grant dollars that we have talked with you about. We also do provide information on early childhood to the communities and talk also about the issue around brain research and how that's important to the development of our children. The next program area is continuing the early childhood care and education, so I'm just going to, that's part of the childhood care and education piece. The last ones are the locally invested resources. You heard a lot yesterday about the grant streams that go to local commissions. They are Great Start, which has a 0-8 parameter on it. These are all parameters that were placed when the legislation happened and then was replaced again when Senate Bill 555 took effect. That's a 0-8 population, but fairly flexible. We have the other grant stream called Children, Youth, and Families, which is goes to research-based programs and initiatives in communities, and that's a 0-18 age range. So they can spend it as communities have identified according to their needs, and we ask them to use research and best practices when they deploy programs in their community. And then the youth investment, which is the Title 20 that we've been talking about, and our portion of the youth investment and what it is used for, what populations it's used for. It does have a 11 to 18 year old age criteria on that grant stream. And then the Safe and Stable Families Act grant stream, which is families with school age, with children aged prenatal to 18. And this particular grant, it was given to the commission because part of the federal requirement is that you do some work around safe and stable families, the prevention piece of a child welfare piece. And so in order for the child welfare folks to continue to get the welfare piece, there needs to be a prevention piece. And so we do the prevention piece. Hopefully I'm explaining that so people can understand the connectivity of that particular piece. So performance measurements is the next tab.
Reference Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. Before we move on, and I don't mean to digress, can we go back to page 19 where it has the list of program reductions?
Yes.
When I go down and I look at the reduction of 58% in funding for crisis and the reduction of money to Great Start and Children, Youth, and Family grants to all counties, tell me how those reductions have impacted the flow chart on page 6.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, what you're seeing is you're looking at going through five special sessions. When we have separate appropriations for different components, the two that you specifically spoke about, there is not state funding for. Those are community pieces, so they would not affect this organizational chart. The pieces that would affect the organizational chart are the ones that are actually administrative reductions or pieces that we talk about statewide evaluation of programs, where we would be removing resources for evaluation, resources that we keep at the state level to evaluate programs holistically. So there are pieces here that are directly affect commission budgets and pieces that directly affect administrative budget. You had asked a question, I believe, earlier, maybe Tuesday, as to whether we've had proportional reductions. We have at the state level and at the community level. Currently through Senate Bill 5100, we are 1% more at the state level in reductions than at the community level. We want to pass as much as we can to the communities. For follow-up.
I apologize for asking such simple questions, but this is a new budget to me. How did House Bill 5100 impact then this diagram of employees? How many employees were affected through layoffs or terminations by House Bill 5100?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, through 5100, no FTE. We actually had removed FTE earlier through special session 2 and 3.
Follow-up. How many employees were in the first and second special session were reduced or eliminated?
One. There was actually one position eliminated and one position held vacant and not hired for, and that's currently still vacant.
So,
Follow up.
With the reduction of 58% for crisis nurseries and $1.3 million for Great Start and that line, was there any reduction in the paperwork required by the local counties?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no. There, actually, we have consistent quarterly reporting that's holistic. It's not, we don't have individualized reporting for nurseries per se or for these great, these funding streams. The quarterly reporting has remained consistent. However, we have gone to an electronic medium in the last biennium that has made it much more efficient and effective at the state level.
Just one last follow-up.
Follow-up.
Have you had an opportunity to speak with your local folks to find out what that impact has been about the reduced funding at the county level, and yet the responsibilities have remained the same, or perhaps in these recessionary times have even increased?
Representative Smith, we have been talking with them. I think we talked about it Tuesday. We're going to coordinate the reporting, so we are actually eliminating reporting requirements as a result. But as a result, I think the issue for local communities is more the result of the comprehensive planning pieces and those kinds of requirements. Our reporting is fairly simple. They have an electronic reporting process, and they just put in some numbers and report it to us. We don't ask for lengthy reporting processes. I think the reporting issues that they're talking about are around the community comprehensive planning, and we are working to coordinate that reporting and eliminate a lot of the paperwork.
Just one last observation. As we go through these budgets again, I'm going to be very sensitive to that. I serve multiple counties. And the issue that's become very aware to me is the fact that these folks are being asked to spend more time doing their paperwork than they are in providing the service, and I want to be very sensitive to that. Thank you.
I do want to follow up, because one of the primary focuses was to get the 36 plans from the county. And am I correct that all 36 plans now are in place? So the staffing activity that was involved in having to work on those 36 plans, tell me now what the staff's involvement now with the county is since the plans are in place. And have we, since the plans are now in place, reduced staffing or increased staffing?
Senator Winters, we have not increased staffing. What we're doing with the staff is a number of those staff in policy and planning. We're also providing direct services to counties. As a matter of fact, we have staff outstationed to provide direct services. So while the planning is completed, we're now shifting gears to help them work on best practices, accountability, develop outcome measures, so that they can now talk to us about their success stories. And so we're providing a lot more technical assistance with the same staff. We have staff who do multiple activities, not just one staff doing planning and that's it. They do lots of work. Almost every staff at the State Commission provides ongoing and technical assistance to local counties. There's probably five staff in the whole commission that don't go out and provide direct support to county.
Given the, and I'm going to ask all the agencies the same question, and you just happen to be the first, but given the severity of where we are in our budget crisis, and given the fact that we know that we're going to have to make some very tough decisions with respect to budget, you as the administrator, I would like for you to be prepared to come back to this body and to tell this body, not the programs, but where your priorities will be in the reduction. I mean, and looking at those reductions from the standpoint of how it either assists you, what are the consequences in you meeting the objective of your organization. And we're asking, you know, I'll be asking every agency to bring me a priority list and then tell me what those consequences are for each. Tell me also, if you make this reduction, what impact it also has on your federal dollars, so that we're getting a clear picture. It's not just the state dollars. But I think most importantly, I think for this body, we need to know what impact it has on the citizens that are being served out in the county. Mm-hmm. And so I would like that kind of linkages as we go through this budget process. Mm-hmm. I think we're all very concerned that what we do here, that we make sure that as much as possible that the decisions that we make can somehow still make sure that the children that we all care about and what have you, the most vulnerable, are still being able to have some level of services. So I want you to keep this comment in mind as we go forward in this process. Does my panel share this directly?
Madam Chair, yes. In fact, I appreciate your comments. I also appreciate the line of questioning that the good freshman... Representative Smith,
Sophomore. Actually, after five special sessions, he's experienced.
Yeah. Experienced two more, and I'll be completely bald.
But, you know, I guess for me, what we're trying to get at here is why are we maintaining the same level of staffing?
Yeah.
What we've heard is that there's one staff has been eliminated. And that there is a vacant position, but I don't think that we've heard yet a good explanation for why we are maintaining the same level of staffing. We did hear that staff are providing direct services to counties, technical assistance, et cetera, but I think a clearer explanation of what that means would be helpful as well in answering the question, why are we maintaining the same level of staffing?
All right, question.
Representative Smith.
As I have been reading through this book, trying to understand what's going on here, I read through the descriptions of the programs, and a lot of them sound similar to me. And when I ask the question about Healthy Start and Babies First, they're very similar, but yet they're two different programs on the ground. Now, maybe this is a real naive question, but why do we have two separate programs running parallel to each other out there in the communities when you can consolidate? To me, I mean, in normal business, that's some of the first things we'd be considering doing. And I know state government isn't like a business, but we spend money in these human services, you know, like there's no tomorrow. And we think that we have to be everything to every person that doesn't have anything. And we can no longer be everything to every person who doesn't have anything. So I get extremely frustrated when I pick up a book like this and I see the same descriptions for the same programs with a different funding source or possibly even the same funding sources, but yet we're helping these babies over here and we're helping these babies over here. That's what I would like to see. I would like to see some consolidation of services on the ground, and therefore we could probably get to some reductions in staffing at the mid level. That's what I would really like to see. I would also like to know if a person is over here a recipient of some of these programs. We have a person over here on the Babies First, and we maybe will have that same person over here in one of our other child care programs. If the same families are taking two services at once, do you have a check and balance system for that? Okay, but like I say, this budget is really frustrating to me. It's so hard to understand. And then when you try to understand it, you almost get your arms around it. No, it just blows up in your face, you see. And I'm almost to the point of saying, okay, if we can't consolidate Healthy Start with Babies First or vice versa, then which one are you going to do without? Because I don't see how we can be running two parallel programs, or maybe I'm looking at it wrong, I don't know, at the same time and still be financially accountable to our bottom line, because...
But perhaps I can explain some of that. Babies First was before Healthy Start. And also, not all counties have Babies First.
Yes, right. Well, Madam Chair, just to put a perspective on it, Babies First is $1.3 million general fund in Department of Human Services for 2001-2003. I'm not sure what happens to it in 03-05. There was discussion last session of eliminating that. As the legislature worked through the budget, that was, and in fact, Governor Kitzhaber had eliminated it from his budget initially. As the legislature worked through the budget, the decision was made to restore that program in Department of Human Services. That money goes out to the counties, and I think Donna can expand on this, but we heard yesterday that that's a medical model, that the Healthy Start is a broader model, if you will, but there is some potential for overlap there, certainly, and there was a budget note in the Commission's budget and the Department of Human Services budget from last session that required some work on how they collaborate and coordinate that so that there wouldn't be, you know, overlap of services, and perhaps Donna would be able to speak to that.
Yes, Representative Smith, we do have a budget note that does state that Babies First and Healthy Start should be complementary and coordinated, not duplicative and overlapping. And we have worked very hard with the Health Department to be exactly that. And so what you see Babies First doing is not the same thing that you see Healthy Start doing, but we make sure that we coordinate with one another so we are not overlapping and we are not duplicating. And I think in most communities, and we have been quite successful in doing just that.
Well, by the time we decide what model we're going to use, and if we're going to use a medical model or a community model, or I don't even understand all that, you'll be out of money by the time we decide if we can consolidate or not. What I'm saying is, as a legislative body, we're like out of money. And yet, I don't see, from when I'm so far sitting on this panel, I don't see a whole lot of yet solutions being brought forth. Maybe that's later down the line. I just keep hearing how wonderful everything is, and we need to continue it because it's great and it's helping all these people who can't help themselves, which is a very good thing to be if you can afford it. We just can't afford it anymore. I guess, Madam Chair, I'm just not hearing anything.
Well, let me try to put some of it of the commission in perspective and where we've come to in Oregon. And let me try to see if I can answer the question to you on Babies First and Healthy Start. Because one program was in one funding stream and another one is in another funding stream. And last session, the governor did cut that from the budget. It was this body who put it back in the budget. If I remember all the pressures, it came from the public health nurse systems and what have you, and so it got back in the budget. Also understand that a part of the commission system, the Service on Children and Families, their system is to drive from what the local communities are saying that they believe are their needs with inside the community, rather than the program starting from here and filtering down. It makes it very difficult because we usually deal with programs based on their title and not based on what the actual function inside of the program is. And I would agree with you. It makes it very frustrating for individuals who aren't aware of the actual things that are inside of the title of, let's say, Babies First, or what's actually happening in Healthy Start. And so you, as we go along this, hopefully we'll begin to discern the differences. This planning locally and the services provided in the community have resulted in communities making a more investment in early childhood and those things that serve kids for children. It's a long-term objective is to take the risk that we currently are dealing with. When I think of methamphetamine, when I think of families that are not together, is to try to put them back together. We heard in this testimony, for example, the work that's being done in the relief nurseries, that's keeping children out of our foster care system. I think, you know,
I understand that.
And so And I think that more importantly what I heard is communities are addressing their own problems. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I heard is that communities are taking the seed monies and that they're leveraging the dollars that we give them. And most of them, that leveraging is anywhere 2 to 3 times more than what we have made as the investment. So I can't say that they aren't doing good, but can we do better? You know, and I think that's what we're all about here, and making sure that we allocate the dollars, what few dollars we have, for them to continue to do their job, particularly as it relates to solving some of the state's problems. I think we should always continue to look at duplication and to eliminate duplication where we find it.
Well, if I could comment on what you said, maybe that is the problem, that there are some differences in these programs, and why should they be all that different from each other?
Primarily because, Representative Smith, each community has determined what is the most valuable need within their community. One community may say that we do need, for example, relief nurseries are not statewide. And we have avoided, actually, of having statewide efforts, because what may be of value in Marion County and what after they do their assessment is a Marion County issue. It's the same within, you know, Molalla. It becomes a Molalla issue. Multnomah County and their priorities needs will be probably different than what you see in Marion County. And that was the reason for getting away from, quote, the state level mandating that if we're going to have this, you're going to all do it and jump through the same hoops. It is in recognition that your local communities know better, are closer to the pulse of things, have a better grasp of what their community needs are than we are at this level. Donna is responsible for bringing those plans, putting together, correlating them with their input, and trying to then say to us, this is what they have said that we need across the state. But they're not going to all look alike. Did I kind of...
Senator Woodard.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, would you like to step over here for a few
but I think it's well that, that the members understand how this evolved and why you don't have the sameness.
I understand. I do have. I actually have a serious question, Don. This is my second time around with this group, so I have some knowledge. But I share a lot of the frustration of the other committee members do, confusion. Luckily, we have a chair who knows the system extremely well and has guided us through it before. It's crossed my mind, only for your commission, but for others, that we are sort of in a parallel situation with the federal government. The federal government gives us, quotation, our money back with all kinds of strings attached. We spend huge amounts of administrative time, effort, and money trying to comply with their regulations and trying to get money out of them that is ours, and raise our overhead. And I've often wondered if our relationship with the counties isn't very similar, that we bring them programs, we have flow through our programs for financial reasons, that is really their money to start with, and all we really do is raise the ante and overhead for both the state level and the county level. That oversight is that we're giving them is far too onerous, and that we'd be better off just giving them a block grant for the work we want done and have some confidence that people at the county level have a few brains and can figure out what's best for their county without us getting as deeply involved as we are. What I'm wondering in that, especially in this tight budget times, is what kind of savings we could expect. Your budget for yours is a little over $2 million, but I wonder what the real cost of the rent at the county level is for them trying to comply with our regulations. And was there any way that the counties could tell us what they how would they spend that money if they'd have more available, if they didn't have to constantly reply to administrative overhead from the state? Is there any way of gathering that data? Can we ask them for it?
Representative Bates, we can certainly ask them for it. From the commission's perspective, most communities have one or two FTE that are folks that are attributing their resource to the commission system, and the rest of it they try to put out into communities. So I don't think the overhead is very high in counties for the commission's particular budget for the commission system. Now, I can't speak to what administrative dollars that the counties themselves would take off for other things like personnel and contracting and all of those things. We could ask them and see what their responses would be.
Madam Chair, quick follow-up. This is just, this is one commission. Okay, there are multiple other ones the counties have to deal with, and if they have to have FTEs deal with each one of those, I would imagine we're looking at some substantial dollars. So I'm not so much interested in just your commission as the entire program that runs the drug and alcohol, OMAP, and the rest of them. That's something significant, mm-hmm. potentially. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we could maybe go back to page 11, 12, and 13, and I'd like to give you some numbers on the panel here. If you look at the policy and support services, it's $191,219 per year FTE. That's the 0103. The 0305 current service levels projected forward is $214,421 per FTE policy and support services. And then in the reduced governor's 0305 budget, it's $220,997 per FTE. And I guess my question is, with the major reductions in services, why would we be increasing in the governor's balanced budget to an equivalent of $221,000 per FTE when the current service level projected forward is only 204? I say only. I mean, that's a huge number, by the way, comparing other departments, $214,421.
Madam Chair, if I could try to answer at least part of that. As the budget is built, it rolls forward any merit increases or salary increases that took place in the current biennium. So the 2001-2003 staffing levels, if there were merit increases and there were some cost of living increases this biennium to date, those roll forward for a full 24 months in 03-05. So you have increased costs due to that. Also, I would note that although the governor's budget as a whole takes out merit increases for 03-05 or proposes to do that, that in the budget system and in the numbers you see here, that reduction hasn't been made yet to the personnel side of it. So it's in the global governor's budget that adjustment has been made, and there's an expectation that there would be no increases in 03-05, but that freeze, if you will, isn't yet reflected in these numbers. So I think that's a smaller amount of increase than would be the roll-up of the salary increases that took place in 2001-2003. But all of that is factored into those numbers. And so I would expect, as you see, the staffing numbers stay level. But that and the increase in the, I even hate to say it, the PERS costs and related other pieces in addition to the salary roll-up would be the reason for that increase, even though staffing numbers don't increase, the costs do.
Follow-up question. Thank you. So what you're saying is that the 0305 current service level, it would not be less than that number. You're saying that the 0305 balanced budget carried forward some increases that might not be there, but if you went back to what's rolled up from this, the ending of 03, it would be no less than $214,000 for FTE.
I believe that's what I would say, yes.
Okay.
I will have to go back and listen to the tape.
Logic is there. I understood what you're saying. And I guess my comment would be that figure is one of the higher figures that I've seen to date in any of the budgets. on an administrative level for FTE.
Senator Morris, you're going to have a real opportunity to really fine-tune this before this is over. And we will be getting into that specific discussion, as well as the discussion, I understand, that there's talking about a 3% reduction in management that the governor may be doing. So there's some other personnel things that are mm-hmm. coming down the pike as we begin this budget combing process.
Would it be helpful if
it would be helpful
our questions?
It will be helpful if you keep that particular question, and as we go through the work session, when we start getting into work session, that will be one that we will address. Sheila is making excellent notes on where our concern levels are, and you can be assured that as when we go through the process, that Sheila will not forget them.
Madam Chair, the one point that I would make is that the policy and support services number, if you're dividing it by FTE, there are additional costs in there that aren't just FTE costs. There are professional services costs, which because of the evaluation pieces that are required for these programs are probably a more significant percentage of their budget than other agencies' budgets. But we can look at all those expenditures, and we will look at those as we get forward towards work session.
And don't hesitate, members, to if you have questions, to go in and talk to Sheila, you know, even when we're not in this forum.
Donna. I'd like to next turn to our benchmark measures. Each state agency was asked to develop key performance measures that are related to the Oregon benchmarks. We have done that. Just to hit some highlights, obviously we're able to do a lot of good benchmarking information with the Healthy Start program and with our court-appointed special advocates. We also have benchmarks in volunteers and in the fund, making sure that our funds are matched and that we have, as you put it, we put a dollar in a community and we get $3 back because the community is investing their resources and leveraging their funding. We have a percentage of leveraging that that we're looking at leveraging about, by 2005, leveraging about $20 million. And that's exclusive of and not including the 20% leveraging in Healthy Start and the leveraging in our relief nurseries. So with that, we're looking at maybe leveraging between $20 and $25 million by the resources that we put in communities.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Can we take a moment to look at these benchmarks? Do we have time to do that now?
No, we can do that.
Donna, what is listed for you as your first goal here? I've got fund services that promote positive outcomes for children and their families consistent with the local plan, and then for key performance measures, I got percentage of families participating in Healthy Start who have improved skills in parenting their children. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What does improved skills in parenting children mean, and how do you measure that?
We measure it through our status report, Representative Bates, and basically it's families who have skills in making sure that their children are healthy, safe, immunizations, reading, literacy, supporting the family to have the skills to raise their children effectively so that children are not advancing into systems that create more difficulty in the future, considering the issues around ready to learn and those kinds of things.
Well, thank you. How do you know that children are reading better?
Do you
test them?
We ask that we are following up in kindergarten with the kindergarten test to see which Healthy Start children come into the school ready to learn. Yes. And we're working with Department of Education to look at the correlation on those studies.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I look through these very carefully and try to determine if these are the measures that I would have used to find out if your programs are working, are our children and families healthier? And things that struck me that I didn't see in here were things like suicide rates, graduation rates, crime rates for kids, pregnancy rate for teens, incidents of child abuse, domestic violence, substance abuse. The things you're measuring to me seem to be rather peripheral, secondary, vague. I kind of want to see outcomes that really get down to whether our families and children are healthier and in a better environment. And I just wondered how you chose the things you did choose as your performance measures.
Representative Bates, we worked with the Progress Board, and they wanted us to be pretty specific about certain things. And so they, after reviewing these, said that they did match the work that we were doing. I understand that there are much more concrete measures that we could have looked at, child abuse, those kinds of things. I'd certainly go back and be willing to have another conversation with the board around these particular measures. But these were the ones that we negotiated with them, and they were the ones that they thought were appropriate. They weren't necessarily we gave them a lot of measures, and these are the ones that we they settled on. So we could certainly go back. We do have a huge effect on child abuse rates. We have an effect on the readiness to learn benchmark. We have an effect on alcohol and drug abuse in families, particularly in relief nurseries and family centers and those kinds of things. And so we certainly could put those in as well.
Donna, I would could follow up on I would encourage you to do so because, you know, I would agree we're looking at outcomes. You know, we're looking at what is happening to families and children and teens as a result of the planning and the programs that we're funding. You know, I would, you know, I'm certain that, or I shouldn't say I'm certain, I would think that those programs like Relief Nurses and others who work with you, we heard yesterday their outcomes, that their outcomes could be a part of, you know, your overall system. Because certainly if abuse is a major problem, which it is in this state, we would want to know whether the investment that we're making is actually reducing mm-hmm. the incidences of, mm-hmm. of abuse in this in, mm-hmm. in the state. We would also want to know, because a part of the funding stream is has to do with alcohol and drug. The information that was given to us is X percentage of families that we're dealing with have alcohol and drug problems. So I think as a policy body, we want to know whether those investments that we're making with the alcohol and drug drug effort into your programs mm-hmm. is really having a reduction on the consumption or the alcohol and drug behavior. So it just seems to me you can go back and tell to the Progress Board, and you can say that, you know, we spoke with the Committee on Health and Human Services, Ways and Means, and they would like for us to take, and I know the benchmarks are there, those benchmarks that has to do with teen pregnancy, the benchmarks that has to do with alcohol and drug, the benchmarks that relate to what the state talks about, Oregon Shines, and take Oregon Shine and make it compatible to what we're doing with the commission. Is that what you'd like to see?
Madam Chair, you spoke eloquently and to the point. Thank you. The only thing I would possibly add to that was that when you do go back to them and tell them we have concerns, get data that is not subjective and self-reported but objective. And that should allow you to evaluate county to county, program to program, and programs inside counties which are not working. I mean, that would be, from my point of view, that would be your real value, not oversight and telling people how to do the job, but evaluating those programs that are really working and then sharing information with other counties.
Right. Senator Bates, that's exactly right.
Thank you.
Representative Smith, and then I'll turn it to Sheila.
Thank you.
She's going to move us along, I can tell you.
I'm going to beat a dying horse here, but I have to ask just one more time, and I think I'm going to ask my question much more blunt this time. So please allow me to do that.
Never been blunt before.
House Bill 5100. We eliminated 7 family resource centers. eliminated together for children in three counties, reduced crisis nurseries by 58% in five counties, reduced costs of program funding by 10% in all counties, reduced locally invested funding by 6% in all counties, and through all of that, there was one FTE reduction?
Representative Smith, that is correct. One FTE reduction and a number of other administrative reductions, but not an FTE.
I just have to share my comment. I feel like I have been beat up back home. I'm upset. I'm of the opinion the reason we have these programs is to turn this money to the local community, and to find out that only one FTE through all of this has been eliminated, knowing that crisis nurseries have been reduced by 58%, is very troubling to me. That's my thought.
Sheila.
Madam Chair, I just had a comment on the performance measures discussion and tying it to outcomes. And just to try to clarify the broader benchmarks that are the state level benchmarks, I know there's a dynamic or I don't know how exactly to express it, but with the Oregon benchmarks, those are broad global measures for the state as a whole. And I think what the performance at the Progress Board was trying to get to with the agency performance measures was to focus in on those measures that agencies could directly affect and where you'd be able to tell, for example, that the commission had an impact versus something else having an impact. So, for example, on child abuse rates, the commission's programs would have an impact on there, but how do you measure the impact of a Healthy Start program in the county compared to other factors that might be in play? So I think one of the issues with going to try to measure those broader benchmarks and tying them to the commission budget is that dynamic, to try and identify what the commission affects and how do you get some data that gives you that information, as opposed to saying, here's our child abuse benchmark, oh, it's up or oh, it's down, but the commission or any other individual agency may have a very small piece of that. So that was just some context that I wanted to throw on the table.
I appreciate that. But I also appreciate at the same time, last session, this panel spent an enormous amount of time with every agency that came before it, and we talked about performance measures and outcomes. And we talked about them so that we could come back this session and we could link them with budget decisions. And I'm still there. We need to be able to talk about the reality of what's going on inside of the agency's program that is having that they're meeting their objectives. And I think we budget noted every agency, if I can recall correctly, to ask them to come back this session so that it specifically relates to what they're doing. I can appreciate the global picture, but I think we also have to have the information of whether what you're doing is working. And how it's working. And I know the only way that we're going to get that is if the agency comes back and says to us, the relief nurseries have had X amount of impact on reducing abuse, neglect, or whatever. But whatever's going on out there in the environment, we need to have some feel of what it is and what's working in addition to this global information. And so if you can get, you probably have it already, Donna, in your system, and it's probably in one of these books that you have given us that we just haven't plowed through. But I do think we need that, and I would also encourage our members to read all this material. It may seem voluminous, but I suspect that some of it is probably already contained therein. Am I correct,
Anna? Senator Winters, that's correct. And even in the appendices, there's a brief, even though we give you books, there is a brief information on the outcomes and findings of Healthy Start around child neglect and abuse and those kinds of things. So we do have that. that wasn't the exercise, you are correct, that we went through with the progress board. So
it would be helpful for future agencies, if they're listening, that you have that information in a concise way inside of these the folders. It makes it a lot easier for this panel, you know, if we're going through here and we see those, because to read the mountains of the voluminous amount of information that we receive and that we're having to go back and research makes it very difficult. I know, I believe it was the Board of Medical Examiners, when they came before us, it was, they had their information chronologically in such a nice order, it was very easy for us to go through it. And I would just encourage all the other agencies to look at what they've done, how they've correlated their information, and how they present it to us. And then I think it keeps us from having to ask you to go back and to bring additional information back before us. Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, I don't want to slow the proceedings, but I do want to make a comment. About 10, 12 years ago, we started 3rd, 5th, and 8th, and 10th grade testing in our schools, and I was on a school board, and that occurred, and I stayed in that board for 10 years. And prior to that testing, it was almost impossible to tell what was going on inside the schools as far as education of the kids were concerned. When that testing was brought in, nobody in the school system liked it. It wasn't our fault. It was the parents' fault, or the grandparents' fault, or somebody else's fault. The kids weren't performing. And there were too many factors just to possibly look at those tests and make any sense out of. Some kids are from low-income families. I mean, there was every excuse in the world not to look at an objective test and find out what those kids were doing. Amazingly, 5, 6, 7, or 8 years into the program, the test started to improve as teachers focused on reading and writing, and the kids obviously were doing better. Now, that is not to say that the entire program was a result of a change, but when people focus on objective data and know they have to reach that objective data, you have some chance of getting there. And so I, once again, I'm going to say, go back to some objective data. It sounds to me like we need to have a conversation with the progress board. From what I'm hearing here, and I haven't heard their side of the story, so I don't know. But this kind of nebulous, feel-good data doesn't do me any good. I don't think it does your commission any good. You have to have some solid stuff. And it sounds to me like you've got some solid stuff, and you weren't allowed to give it to us. And I would like to see that, because you may be doing a wonderful job and not getting credit for it.
Representative Bates, thank you. I think what Sheila identified is correct. They were talking more specifically about the agency rather than their connection with the child abuse rates and the alcohol and drug rates. And we do have that information, and we'd be happy to provide that to you.
Continue.
And just so you can see the work, on page 33, there is a report by that was approved by Jeff Trines on what we had worked out with them. So you can see that it is their information. Then I'm going to skip over the comprehensive planning. You've heard a lot about that, and then go into the best practices. One of the things that we, and that's on page 39, the State Commission is working very hard to develop and help support local commissions with the information around best practices. What are best practices? What are the components? How would we use them? And then what kind of support and technical assistance they need? All of our grant streams require that those funding, that money be used for best practices. So we are working very diligently to support local folks in moving towards a best practice model. We have some best practice models already in Healthy Start and then the Relief Nursery and some of the CASA work, court-appointed special advocates. We are still working on using the locally invested funds and moving them in the best practices model work. So I just wanted to say that the State Commission is spending a lot of time supporting that work and looking at best practices. And then the budget notes, some of those were around, those are on page 42.
Just a question, Donna, on early illiteracy, mm-hmm. What are you specifically looking at?
Senator Winters, and on the best practices, mm-hmm. do you mean? We are looking at all the research that there is around early literacy. You're looking at the START program and other kinds of programs around that. We are detailing, again, we want counties to be able to choose which programs that they would like, but we want it to be grounded in research and best practices. So that's what we're doing. Don't have any new technology initiatives on page 41, so I'm going to skip over that. On page 42 are the answers to the budget notes. The budget notes around Healthy Start being voluntary and having a written consent, we have provided you with information around that. The budget note around the Healthy Start distribution, we've provided you information on that and the Medicaid. The budget note on the Healthy Start staffing, we've provided you information on that. And then also the issue around the coordination with Babies First, which was also a request. And if you need further information, we've worked very hard to try to coordinate the services with Babies First and to make sure that they aren't duplicative and they're complementary to one another. And then on the affirmative action, the other piece of paper you have is something we're quite proud of. We have coordinated a cultural competency and gender-specific service committee with a number of state agencies are now providing joint training, whereas three agencies may have gone out to a community to provide cultural competency or gender-specific training. We now provide it to all the community members in one system. And what you have is just an example of the coordination we're doing around cultural competency in communities. In the paperwork I handed out, where you have the Commission for Children and Families, the Public Safety Coordinating Council, and other partners working together to provide the training in communities, and that the presenters are from the Department of Education, the Oregon Youth Authority, and the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. So you have folks going out together rather than providing three separate trainings for three separate groups.
I guess I have a question, because we're looking at duplication of effort. What does the governor's affirmative action office do? And would this particular activity and function fit within the governor's affirmative action effort?
Okay,
I'll flag it. You know.
And then on page 46, we have the audits. Mm-hmm. The audits that we had were the Legislative Fiscal Office did its audit on our Phase 2 comprehensive planning. I believe Sheila has provided you with a copy of that, and we talked about that on Tuesday a little bit. We haven't had any other audits per se, other than we have had evaluations of Healthy Start, court-appointed special advocates. We're working with the relief nurseries to support their work. And also we have an early childhood systems evaluation that is soon to be published and available for legislators. And with that, I'll finish my presentation.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
I have two committees that go on Tuesday afternoon, or this afternoon, and so I wasn't here for the whole presentation, but I certainly picked up on some concerns this afternoon. And I've watched these budgets over the years, and I agree with the chair. Last time in the budget process, we sure tried to spell out the way these kind of reports could come. And I guess, you know, I've always been an advocate for all kinds of human services, and I hope people that are out there listening, as well as you, to know that when you're
reports to us are clear and concise and organized in such a way that we can get our hands around objective data, it helps us to be better advocates for you. But when I heard Representative Smith make his comment, and you don't have an answer, it makes it more difficult for us to be, you know, I couldn't repeat if I tried to everything that he cited. But when you have those kinds of cuts that have been made through five special sessions and everything else that have happened, and yet there's only one FTE differential, it makes it look like, whether it's true or not, it makes it look like business as usual back at the state. Mm-hmm. Okay? And it doesn't matter what the reality is. The perception of reality around here is far more important than the reality. And you've got to deal with that. And you have to help us in those reports. And so I'm not just speaking to you. I'm speaking to all committees or all agencies that come before this committee to report. I don't know if I'm being helpful here or not, but that's my perspective after sitting, and this will be my sixth session of sitting in on this committee. And I want to be an advocate. I care about people. I think human services gets us real bang for our bucks, and we saw that yesterday, you know. But you got to help us. And I don't think we're getting that help in some of the reports that are coming.
Yeah, that's absolutely why I made the statement that I did. We spent a lot of time last session on this issue with the hope that agencies were going to come back with objective performance outcomes. I assured Senator Yee, who is no longer with us, who has probably had this charge and has worked this building for a number of years, that we would continue this effort, because until we're actually able to get the kind of information that we quite frankly can leave this building and say to the general public that in fact the decisions that we made was based on information that really truly says that we are not squirreling money someplace else and we're not wasting dollars and it is all about, you know, not all about perception, but perception is a large part of what we have to do when we leave this building and how we have to be and that we're being asked to be accountable for all the dollars. So he's correct with that, and I'm going to shift gears, and Don, I want to thank you for your presentation, conversation early about wanting to be kept abreast on the Healthy Start issue. I would appreciate that you keep that information flowing, and we need to get this particular problem under control as quickly as we can. With that, we will close our public hearing on this particular bill. But I do want to announce that those of you who know me know that I'm task oriented and that I'm about trying to get a job done, and that I will be asking members of this panel from time to time to be responsible for certain pieces of this budget or be responsible for recrafting something as we go along. And along that line, given the fact that we have four, actually, with our committee, five committees, that is looking at issues that relate to health and human services. We have been meeting as chairs to make sure that the product, as we go through this process, that we ultimately will end up with will be something that that we can agree on. That doesn't always happen in this building. We don't always set in motion a process between policy and budget. We're trying to do that this time, and particularly with two specific issues. Those issues are the Oregon Health Plan and the mental health piece. So Representative Cruz, who was chairing the policy group on the House side, and Representative Westland, who has the new committee that has to do with audit and budget and restructuring, and myself have been meeting and including so that we don't leave out the governor's office. So we're talking about everyone is in sync. We will have Aaron Kelly Seals and also Gene Thorne, and we have put together two work groups. The work group on the Oregon Health Plan will be driven from this group here by Representative Bates and Margaret Carter. And the members of their committee will include Bruce Goldberg, who is our new policy director for Oregon Health Policy and Research, John Powell, who will bring in the insurance piece, Tom Holt, who will be at the table on the pharmacist piece, Jim Gardner, who will bring the pharmaceutical piece, Bill Murray, who, and I think he really belongs on mental health, I think he's got him in the wrong category, Kevin Earls, who will to deal with the hospitals, Director Thorne of Human Services, Barney Spate, and he's with Kaiser. We're asking him to facilitate. Rocky King, who has Insurance Governing Board, who deals with the FIAP program, and Stephen Petroselli, who is with the dental community. They have the task of working in a very short period of time. They will begin on Monday. They're to have recommendations to myself and Westland and Cruz the 10th of March as to how we will begin to go forward. The other group, which is being driven, the two policy people from this panel, will be Bates and Avell Gardley on mental health. The mental health members are Gina Furman with the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Services, Bob Beckett, who is the mental health director in Josephine County, Judge Pamela Abernathy, so that we don't lose continuity when we're talking about these issues, from Salem, Jeff Davis, who's the administrator for Marion County Health Department, and Peter Davison, who is the manager for Multnomah County's mental health, Raul Ramirez, who is the sheriff here in Marion County, so that we have that perspective from them, and of course Jean, we're going to really overwork Jean because she's having to be in all of this, and David Underinger, who is administrator for Providence Hospital, and Dr. Norwood Knight Richardson from Portland. We're still in the process of trying to locate a facilitator. We do have a facilitator for Oregon for the health plan, but we're looking for a facilitator who has both the knowledge of the system, but is not so into the system that they're coming with the vested interest. So that's what we have been about. You've probably seen the members coming up to talk to me at trying to get this organized, trying to get us going. This group will start meeting on the on Tuesday, the 18th. They actually got shortchanged because they have to have the same report in by March 10th. So you know they lost an extra day. It's our hope that in this building this time we recognize we have severe crisis, but we all want to work together at the table to solve them. This is not an environment in this building for partisanship. It just isn't there. Neither is it there for the advocates to think that, you know, it's going to come to us and ask us for more money. If this is an environment that says we're all at this table, we've got to sit at this table, and we've got to work at this table to solve the crisis problems that exist in the state. And so that's what the focus is on these two groups. We did not forget about alcohol and drug, because members on these committees will bring in the alcohol and drug piece on both of these committees, because that's an integral part of what goes on. But I wanted to share that with you, because I know how this building buzzes about that there's something that's going to happen, and that is in play. Leadership has supported what the three of us are doing in order to make it happen in this building. I don't think I've ever known this to happen in this building this way. Have you, Sheila? So you have both sides of the aisle that's working together with its stakeholders, and they're working with budget. Both policy committees are working with budget to try to make sure that we're going to come up with a policy and a budget to take care of our citizens in the state. So with that, if unless there's questions about this, we are adjourned.